Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, wherever you are in the world. This is Brunch Boxing. I'm your host, Matt, and I'm here with a very special guest, one of the new voices of boxing. He just made his commentary debut last week at a Box Lab Promotions event in Orlando, Florida. I'm here with boxing royalty, Justin Goosen Brown. What is going on, Justin?
Hey, what's up, man? Good to be here. How you doing?
It's good to have you here. Now, obviously, people see the name Goosen Brown. If you're a boxing fan, the name is recognizable. We recognize it with, you know, we got Dan and Joe Goosen. We know Tom Brown. We know Brittany Goosen Brown. Just you guys are like the bloodline of boxing, you know, for wrestling fans out there. Just tell the people who is Justin Goosen Brown and a little background about your family history.
Yeah, well, thank you, man. Thanks for that applause, too. So obviously, like you said, boxing royalty, and I appreciate that a lot. But yeah, it goes way back to my grandfather, my mom's dad, Al Goosen, kind of got it started and kind of started doing shows at the country club in Los Angeles. And then my family, my Uncle Dan built a boxing ring in his backyard. My Uncle Joe started training, and we love the sport. It's something in our blood, I guess. We just love the fighters the most. And I don't know, it's just something about it that calls us all to join this game, even though it can be difficult at times, but we all love it and just try and do best by the fighters.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, you had your commentary debut this past week. First of all, what made you want to get into boxing commentary?
Well, I mean, obviously, you see my Uncle Joe Goosen does it, and that kind of, you know, when you see someone that you know is doing it and doing it well, it kind of opens that path for you and kind of thinking about it. But not only that, my Uncle Dan, the promoter, Dan Goosen, did some, and then my Uncle Greg, who was a professional baseball player, did some commentary as well. So, you know, it's just, what's there not to like about it? You get paid to call fights, you know, and talk about fights. It's awesome.
Now, you mentioned that your uncle was a professional baseball player. You yourself played baseball. You know, you played at San Diego State University, and you also played some minor league ball. You were a pitcher. So tell us about your athletic exploits.
Yeah, so I got into baseball. It just always came easier. You know, like I was lucky enough, obviously, with my family history to be able to see some real big time, you know, pros working out in the gym, and I'd be kind of like standing next to him and like, yeah, I don't have that. So baseball is just, it just came easy to me, and, pitching and all that. I was pretty good at it. I'm not good at, no, it wasn't good enough to make it to the major leagues and all that, but, you know, I just loved competing, and I took it as far as I can. And now, trying to use that eye that I had for, you know, competing and high-paced sports to see and call what I see in the boxing ring.
Now, what made you pursue a career in baseball as opposed to just getting right into the family business? Because you guys are synonymous with the sport of boxing.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like a boxer. You only get this amount of time to play your sport. And I love, like I said, I love competing and like being around a locker room and all that stuff and trying to win games and just all that pressure and stuff. And that's why I kind of like broadcasting too, because when that mic's pointed at you, it's the only thing that gives you that same little adrenaline of like, oh, here we go, let's rock and roll. And that's what, you know, I was a bullpen pitcher. So coming out of that bullpen, it's like, all right, let's go. I can't blow what our whole team's been working for 8 innings just to blow it in the ninth. So just that adrenaline competing and trying to be great is why I wanted to play a sport. Yeah.
Now, going into your first broadcast, you know, obviously there had to be like some type of nerves, but what was your first DAZN broadcast like?
I mean, it was the hardest part, 100% say, is that intro where you're standing up with the mic in front of you, especially with me. Like, I just start, my uncle kind of does that too. In between, but just to focus on that camera and not, and like stand with the right posture and look at the camera, that's the hardest part. And then once the fights start going, you just call what you see. And, you know, I feel comfortable enough doing that now. It's just getting the verbiage and all that stuff right.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the opening part, because I used to do acting when I was a little bit younger, and when we would record stuff, I just look back and I'm like, yo, I look real stupid just standing there on camera. Mm-hmm. You know, you just got yeah. It really is the posture. You got to see how you look.
It's terrible.
Your hand placement.
I was like, I'm going to bring a stand in next time. I'm just standing there for 30 minutes where they're like, all right, zoom in, zoom out, move over a little bit, scooch a little closer. And I'm like, who's really like cares about that? Let's just talk about what's going to happen. But I mean, you have to do it.
Now, what kind of like prep work do you do going into like one of these events? Because I remember I spoke to Al Bernstein, and he was like, one of the big pieces of advice he would give to any young broadcasters to be prepared or be over prepared. Make sure you have more than enough material. Like, what's your philosophy when it comes to prepping to do an event?
Well, this is the first like one I've done on like the Zone and like with a real producer and all that stuff. But I usually try and look at the box rec and kind of get it. But I know from how much that could change the closer you get to the fight. So I wait till really I start looking at the main event and kind of start looking through all their footage. And then the week of the fight, I just kind of immerse myself in all their tape and all their footage and kind of what they do well. It was like in baseball, I'd do a scouting report on what hitter I'm about to face. What do they do? What do they do bad? What can you take away? So I kind of look at that for both of them, try and find as much inside information as I can. Like you want to have, if you're going to be an analyst, you want to be able to provide info that, you know, the viewer wouldn't have when they just turn the fight on. So stuff like that I could provide, knowing what they like to do, knowing if they kind of have a weakness or if they do look for a way out. I was able to predict a little bit of that stuff. And it feels good when you do it, because it's lucky when it happens, but it's coming from being prepared.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, do you have any announcers or analysts? It doesn't have to be boxing, that maybe you looked up to growing up.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you know the answer to that one. Yeah, it's funny. I find like my cadence and stuff when I'm talking, because I go to like a deeper voice on it, and I'm like, oh, I sound like my Uncle Joe right here.
Now, do you have a signature call yet?
No signature call. I mean, I just call it, like, I'm trying to just be a calm, a calm voice and calling the fight action and what's going on in between the two fighters. And I think probably my best attribute on that is being able to see everything. Some might struggle with being able to see the difference between a quick shot that lands on the gloves or, you know, when on the TV, because I look at the ring when I'm doing it, and it's like those baseball eyes that I have. I could like track a baseball and all that stuff. I could see those little, you know, subtle punches that might kind of sneak by to a lot of people.
Yeah. Now you said that this was your first time really working with like a real producer, but have you like done any like commentary stuff beforehand?
Yes, I've done. I've done two. One was in Seattle, Tacoma. That was my first one, and I was probably a little bit jumpy on it. And then the other one was in San Antonio.
Was that at the Emerald?
Yes, Emerald Queen. It was Kingsley.
You know, it's so funny. You know, I've heard you before.
Yeah, you have. See, you didn't even know.
Yeah, like, I have heard you before.
This little wise.
Oh, that is cool. Yeah, that, because, you know, some of those like club shows, those casino shows, I love to just randomly watch those.
Yeah.
I've definitely heard you before on there. Now, how would you assess, like, how do you, like, go back and assess, like, how you did? Like, do you grade yourself? Do you figure, oh, maybe I should have did this, maybe I should have did that? Like, how do you assess your performance after calling an event?
I've probably watched the whole show that I just did probably three times already. It's like after I pitched in baseball, it'd be up all night just watching, being like, what could I have done better? What did I? So like some things I'm like, that was good. And then some I'm like, oh, I stuttered a bit there. Or, you know, maybe I talked a little too much at some point, and I just kind of keep that all in mind. It's just like practicing, you know, got to get those reps in.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, it is kind of like baseball. So would you say that, you know, your baseball career has really prepared you for, like, the next steps when it comes to being an announcer?
Yeah. I mean, it just comes from, like, obviously when I come from my family too, when I'm out there, I know that I'm representing more than myself. So I want to be the, like, whenever I go and like Justin Goosen Brown means more than Justin Goosen Brown. It means everyone in my family that's done this before me. So I try and work just as hard because I carry all that every time that I'm in a boxing circle.
Yeah, you know, because people will automatically see your name and they were like, oh, we know who this guy is, you know. Do you feel kind of weird? Because obviously you're over at The Zone and your dad is over with TGB and Amazon and stuff like that. What made you want to choose The Zone instead of, like, working closely with your family?
Well, I mean, it was a box lab show. We've done shows with The Zone too, just like Stanionis and Boots. We were part of that, and that was on The Zone. But it's just, you know, if the opportunity is there, I'm not ready to call a big time show on a pay per view for Amazon and like that. So I'm getting my reps in. That was a smaller type of a club show, and it was a good opportunity for me to kind of take that. It's like rising through the ranks, you know. You go from your 4-round fight to your 6-round fight to your 8. I'm still climbing up those ranks, and I'm just trying to get better every step along the way. So
now, who would you say is the best guy from the last card that you did?
I mean, there's this kid Alex Bray. He's up to 10 wins right now. And I told him, too, after the fight, I was like, you know what I like about you, man? Because I watch his amateur tape, and he was mediocre, you know, like kind of jumpy, didn't really know what he was doing. And then his first fight, I was like, hey, not bad. And then, like, his 7th fight, I got to watch, and I was like, this kid's really getting good. And he's only 19, and he just keeps getting better. He threw this, and then this fight, it happened to be lucky. I was like, because I was with Michael Woods, and he was saying he wanted a knockout on the last fight. I was like, you know, Michael, if you're a betting man, this would be the one to bet on. And then right when I said that, he just threw the short, quick, little right hand and slipped another right hand coming from his opponent, Espino, and he just rocked him on the side of the head with a quick little short right.
Got about it in the first round.
Got him out of the first round. I mean, he keeps getting better, and he's mean, and he looks the part. He's 6'3", 154, and he's good, man. He's definitely one to keep an eye on.
Now, how did Big Gergen look to you? Because I like heavyweight boxing, so I always look at the heavyweights. At Gergen, he's supposed to be one of the future guys. How did he look to you?
You know, it wasn't really a big test for him, if I say so. He looked good, though, you know. Just took his time and did what he was supposed to do. He went through that whole training camp and a few opponent switches, and he kind of got a body put in front of him that wasn't quite up to his level, and he took care of the job.
Now, you've been around, like, huge fighters, huge events all your life. What would you say is the biggest event that you've, like, either been around or been a part of?
I would say the biggest event, I mean, obviously there's big fights that I've been around, like Mayweather-McGregor was huge, but I would say probably the Wilder Fury 3 is probably my favorite just event, because, I mean, like you said, the heavyweights, and it's, you know, it's been a...
It's nothing like it, man. Yeah,
just that glamour division, and one punch could change anything, and they're so... Both those guys are just behemoth and so strong and so fast and trade and knockout. I mean... That's probably the one. And they both haven't been. They really gave a lot of themselves that night.
Yeah, neither one has been the same since, if we're being honest. Like, that was a very violent, violent fight.
Yeah, that's why, I mean, this game all comes down to the fighters. When they go in there a fight like that, they leave a lot of themselves in the ring that night. And for us and for, you know, obviously they have their pride and they have all, you know, the whole training camp, but They leave a lot of themselves in the ring for our entertainment. That's why I always give my respect to them, and it's always about them.
Now, who would you say is the best fighter you've seen up close?
Oh, man, I'll tell you what. This might be recency bias, but Manny Pacquiao at 46.
Let's go.
Just go. Like, that was the first time I've got to see that man with my own two eyes. And just seeing all the tricky little things that he's got so many tricks in his bag that even if he's a touch slower, even if he's kind of got a touch less power, less in the tank, it's just like he knows how to find his openings. He knows how to make you think, how to feint you, how to kind of keep you on edge every single second in that fight.
You know, it's funny because a lot of people, you know, obviously a lot of people are disappointed in Burns' performance. Oh, why didn't he do this? Why didn't he do that? Me, I was like, because Manny Pacquiao wasn't going to let him do that. There's certain tricks that Manny was using that I thought threw Barrios off, like even early in the fight.
Yeah, I know. It's one thing. I mean, we could all sit not in the ring, not getting hit, and be like, oh, it was a 46-year-old. But it's like, look a little closer. You think if that was a true 46-year-old in there, I think he would have capitalized a few more times. But Manny's doing so – he's keeping you on edge 24-7, thinking, feigning, and you don't want to overcommit because you don't know, is he coming in now? Is he going to take that step back? I'm open for the counter for that little right hook. There's a lot of thinking and a lot – it's like chess at insane high speed.
Now, what did you think of the fight between Sebastian Fundora and Tim Zhu?
I told Fundora after the fight, my man, you keep getting better. You keep getting better. He's getting better. And he's still young, 27. And, you know, I mean, obviously, Tim Zhu, how do you prepare for a 6 foot, a giant 154-pounder that's got great timing and could just hit you? You think you're out of the way, then you just get hit by a looping left hand that you never thought in the world that you would get hit by.
Yeah.
Like that first round, he went around, Tim had his head off the line for the straight left and Fundora looped it and it just catches you right in the chin and you're like, where did that even come from?
Yeah, he's gotten a lot better. Yeah. Now, when you call fights and you do your research and you're looking at the action, like, what exactly is it that you're looking for that, you know, would make you feel like, oh, this fight is probably going to win this fight. This fight is doing a little bit better than I thought. Like, what kind of stuff are you looking for in the ring?
Well, I look at a lot of tape, and I've had the opportunity, obviously, and being around events to speak at some high-level matchmakers and kind of get the idea of what these guys do well and what they, you know, kind of struggle with. And so, like, Angel Barrientos had that fight, and some people might have been surprised that it was such a tough fight, but I was looking at his opponent, Jorge Romero, and he's a 31-year-old, comes from Cuba, does a lot of things well, and he knows how to work his way to the inside and make it a rough fight. So I was really interested to see that. And then I saw Barrientos. My question before that was, how is he going to perform? Because I know he's dangerous on the outside. He's got that length as well. But he looked very sharp on the inside, rolling, keeping his elbows nice and tight, all that. So I kind of take what I know from him and then what I could get from both fighters and, you know, kind of just watch it as it plays out. You never quite know how it's going to play out, but you know what two guys could do and what they could do well.
Do you ever, like, have to get out of the habit of maybe calling a fight like one side, you know, maybe just watching the good work that one guy's doing, maybe not about the work that the other opponent is doing?
Yeah, well, I mean, I try and be fair. It also comes from the place I've worked with a lot of, you know, I'm in the back of the fights that we do with TGB and talking with the opponents, getting them ready for their fights and make sure they're wrapped and ready to go. Everything's perfect for them because, you know, they're going in there just the same. So I try and be as fair as I can to both guys. It's a fight. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Now, you did mention that, obviously, you take a lot from your Uncle Joe, who, great trainer, great announcer. What kind of wisdom has he imparted upon you as you go through this journey as a commentator?
Well, just obviously, there's the quick little tips that he could give, and the quick that comes from his corner skill. You know, you gotta give those quick tips that you can't be elongated on it, or else the fighter's got 1 minute to really think about what you're saying. So he's very quick with me. He says, get in, get out, because there's action going on all the time. You don't want to be talking over, you know, a big moment in the fight. Be fair to both guys is another one. And then, you know, have information that others wouldn't be able to have. For him, he's great at when there's a cut, because he is a cut man as well, a great cut man at that. So he could, like, have all that insider information. So I'm trying to learn as much as I can as far as all that stuff goes, to have as much knowledge as I can. You know, like I asked about, like, instant replay and all that stuff before, just to make – I had a pretty good idea that there was going to be no instant replay that night, but just in case.
Now, how many events are you planning on calling this year?
It's kind of like show by show with me. We'll see again. I believe I got one coming up on August 9th. But you know, boxing, no date is ever set.
Yeah,
this would be a smaller one. It's pretty, you know, getting closer. But yeah, there's no such thing as a set date of boxing until those two guys are in the ring.
Do you have like a maybe like a dream fight or a dream matchup that you would like to call one day?
No, I haven't gotten to that. I just enjoy the fights that I get to call, you know, and try to keep getting better. So
if you could go back in history and be on the call for any fight in boxing history, which one would it be?
Well, once again, this is recency bias because I was watching it the other night before on my kind of like plane flight and stuff home before the Pacquiao fight, but I was just watching Pacquiao and Marquez. Because that's just, I mean, what a great, those two guys were anticipating each other's counters so well. And Manny would do a great job. Like once he kind of realized what Marquez was trying to do, Manny would sit back and let Marquez come at him. And, you know, just the high level where there's just so much going on is just, it just makes me like, because I love how great they are and how prepared they are for everything and how many different game plans they have and how fast they could adjust is really the greatest thing.
You know, you have like a really unique perspective when it comes to looking at the sport of boxing because you've kind of seen it at every level. You know, obviously, your dad is one of the great promoters, started as a matchmaker, your uncle, trainer, you know, you've been around fighters, you know. Like, how do you, like, use all of, like, your family history, your knowledge that you've picked up to take it into a broadcast with you?
I just ask questions and I love it. So it's easy to remember, you know, like I get to talk to fighters after they're in like the weeks coming up to the fight and their press conference, all that, and ask them what they think about something. If a fighter's at the show, I could talk to them and ask them what they thought and just getting as much information as I can from the ones that are great at it. And I have the opportunity to talk to the highest level. So it's easy for me to remember it because I love it and I care about it. So and then just retaining that and having that information to pull from when I am calling fights.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you did work with Michael Woods and I think is Kieran Bhatia. How were they to work with? Like, were they easy to work with? Were they welcoming? Who's this young punk that's coming here? Like,
how's that go? I mean, not outwardly, but no, they're good. They're good. They're nice. Yeah, it was fun. I mean, they're very welcoming, especially, you know, it's my first one and they've kind of been doing it for a minute. And to make that adjustment from a 2-man booth to a 3-man booth. And, you know, Michael was awesome. He kind of let me be more of the analyst and talk about the fight action while he kind of went more into the background of the fighters and you know, the stuff that fans would want to know about him, why I kind of focused on just being talking about what's going on inside the ring right now and their past fights and what they could do.
You ever wanted to do any boxing yourself?
I mean, listen, I told you I could go to the gym and train and all that, but when I'm standing in the gym and I got the privilege again to be with great pros and I get to see them work the heavy bag, I'm hitting one right next to them, like, yeesh. Can't be on the business end of that one, man.
Like, it just sounds different.
Yeah, it's just like I'm feeling pretty good, and then, you know, some like champion will come in there and it'll just be tapping it with his just straight arm punches. I'm like, oh my god.
So what would be a success for you in this endeavor?
You know, just it's the same as baseball. I kind of just do it, and I'm going to try it, my give it my all, and see as far as I could go. I don't want any regrets on it. I'm saying, like, maybe I could have done better. Maybe I could have done that. I'm going to try and take advantage of every opportunity I have and try and be the best possible version of myself because I'm going to be me on it. I can't, you know, pretend to be someone else. So if people like it, then I could keep doing it, but if I go down and, like Tim Zhu said, if I go down and I give it my all, but I crash and burn along the way, you know, that's a success.
The game is the game. It happens. Yeah, man. Now, did I know you played baseball too. Did you have like a favorite baseball team growing up?
No, I always kind of like the players, you know, and that's how I look at boxing as well. It's like, your trainer could teach you a ton, but the best way to learn is by watching the greatest in the world do it. You know, you can't, like, watching a professional guy similar to me throwing in the major leagues. It's like, what is he doing that I'm not? And what could I pick up from it? And what could I add to my own game and my own style?
So who would you say were the great baseball players that you looked at growing up?
I mean, obviously, when I was kind of young, I loved Greg Maddux because I wasn't like a flamethrower. I was more of a thinking, like, what did he just do on this slider away? Did he throw his hands at it? Do I have a chance to bust him in? Or did he really not see that slider? Could I go right back to it? You know, it's a thinking man's game. But in baseball, it, with that pitch clock now, I get 15 seconds between every pitch. In boxing, it's happening.
Yeah.
Snap, 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 snap. What did he just do on that feint? What did he do when I kind of shot the right hand? And they're making those adjustments with theirs. They probably can't even tell you. Some guys, I don't think they're not able to express what they're seeing, but they see it and they just react to it. And some guys really have to think about it. I was more of the thinker.
Yeah, thought about.
Excuse me.
The baseball announcement.
Baseball announcement.
Well, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, no problem. Well, I love.
Go ahead.
I love playing baseball and I love being around the guys and I love competing, but we love boxing, man. There's something like cinematic about it. Just the way, like Pacquiao, once again, I'm going to keep going back to it because it's the most fresh in my mind, but just like watching him operate in the ring, it's like watching a movie. And that's why, do you think all these movies come out about boxers? There's something that just is, it's something about one man, two men in the ring. They have all their entourages. When they're in the ring, they're alone, and everything just gets exposed. It's the greatest sport in the world.
You know, it's funny you say that because I always tell people you could take any sport in the world and put their greatest moment, Super Bowl, Game 7, nothing compares to that feeling of a big fight, that anticipation when that bell's about to ring.
Yeah. It's the greatest. It's just something about it is just beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely, man. But listen, man, we're looking forward to seeing your journey, you know, seeing some, you call some great fights, some career highlights, man. Just tell the people where they can follow and support your journey at.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm starting to be a little bit more active on Twitter. I've been kind of trying to do that more. So I'm on Twitter. You see it probably right now. It's Justin Goose 2. Then Instagram, just Justin Goose. And I'll keep everybody updated the second I get a new fight and something. I'll post about that. And I'll post a lot of boxing stuff as well. But that's probably the best way to keep up with me at the moment.
All right, man. Listen, I appreciate you taking the time to join me, man. Like we put this together really quickly, man. So I appreciate you, man. I definitely do. Hey, give your dad my regards, man. I gotta see him soon.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure he's listening.
All right, man. You have any parting words for the listeners out there?
Oh, man, just keep supporting boxing any way, shape, or form. It's about the fighters. You gotta, you know, support and that's about it, you know? It's not about who's calling the fights. It's not about who's promoting them. We gotta just support the fighters.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Justin Goose and Brown, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. And make sure you guys go give Justin a follow, man. He's one of the new voices in the sport of boxing. So you gotta, you know, check in with that, man. Sometimes you gotta get in with people on the ground floor. I keep telling people that. Get it on the ground floor, people. Don't wait till he becomes Al Bernstein or Jim Lampley to try to talk to him.
No, man.
Get on the ground floor.
one more little tidbit before I go. Do you know where the 10 Goose came from, Matt?
No, I do not.
Well, my mom is the youngest of the 10 Goose. And so my Uncle Joe, my Uncle Dan, my Uncle Greg, all of them, there's 10 of them, 8 brothers, 2 sisters. And my mom's the youngest. That's where the 10 Goose comes from.
See,
that's my little tidbit right there.
I did not know that at all, man.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Thank you for joining me, man.
Thank you, man.
All right, we'll chat soon.
Have a good one. Thanks.
You too. That was Justin Goose and Brown, ladies and gentlemen. Listen, we'll be back later this week. I think I have another interview set up, but I can't remember. Honestly, boxing is so busy right now, especially with Manny Pacquiao just fighting. It was so much stuff. We still got content that we got to put up from that week. So, you know, we'll get it out to you guys. But this has been another edition of Brunch Boxing. He is our COO, the Mexican Al Heyman Mike. He is our host, Ezra Boxing. I am Matt. We are Brunch Boxing, and we are out. Shout out to Huey, the producer.
Thank you. See you.